evangelizing animus. Now, we have got, this is basically the last lecture you're going to get almost for the week, because tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, we've got our practicals, outreaches, activities. There's some evening meeting activities. We've got some forms still on like Wave the Master program. But this is one last lecture for just about the week until next Monday. We've got a huge amount of activities coming up. So, it's vital that you know how to evangelize animists. Animist, animism, witchcraft, voodooism. Very few people really understand animism. On one of my overseas ministry flights, an in-flight documentary caught my attention. Some anthropologist was waxing eloquent about the incredibly advanced Mayan civilization of Central America in the 15th century. They didn't have a written language, but they were incredibly advanced. These Mayans built spectacular pyramid-like temples, all without the wheel. Of course, they did use slave labor to move those massive stones, but the slaves were captured from neighboring tribes. Like that made it any better. Unfortunately, these impressive temples were used for human sacrifices, but this human sacrifice were necessary to make the sunrise each day. But they only used slaves and prisoners captured from neighboring tribes. None of this seems to dampen the enthusiasm of this anthropologist as he eagerly described the amazing, complex, intricate Mayan civilization. They had a fascinating sport, he said, which was a cross between a basketball and football, although you could only use your shoulder to score a goal. Unfortunately, the losing team were all put to death. And so I carried on. I could only wonder at the mental and ethical gymnastics that this anthropologist and film presents on what I assume was a National Geographic film. I didn't see the beginning. I'm not sure, but I don't know who else would be as stupid other than National Geographic to bring out such drivel as this. Praising the incredibly advanced Mayan civilization, which had not discovered the wheel, didn't have a written language, used slave labor, engaged in human sacrifice, routinely executed the losing sports team, but they were incredibly advanced. Well, the antidote to all this mindless nonsense is to watch Mel Gibson's Apocalypto, which should be required viewing for all anthropology students at universities, because this takes a hard look at what the so-called Mayan civilization was like, which was it was a brutal, slave-raiding, mass-murdering culture engaging in nothing less than genocide. And I think that anybody who sees that should question the whole National Geographic narrative. One of my favorite Time magazine covers of all time has got to be this one, Lost Tribes, Lost Knowledge. When native cultures disappear, so does a treasure trove of scientific and medical wisdom. And on the cover, there's a picture of this Papua New Guinean cannibal with a bone through his nose. It was during a visit to the Field Museum in Chicago that I saw this display of reverence for paganism with this cover of the Time magazine, Lost Tribes, Lost Knowledge. How on earth are treasure troves of scientific and medical knowledge lost by these tribes going extinct? What scientific knowledge could be possessed by tribes without a written language? But closer examination revealed that these tribes are going extinct because of the work of Christian missionaries, particularly New Tribes Mission and Wycliffe, who were being damned to hell, which of course National Geographic doesn't believe exists, because of their cultural genocide. As these tribes are evangelized and come to Christ, they're abandoning the old tribal religions of headhunting, cannibalism, spirit worship, and polygamy. So it's not like the people are dying, it's just that their life expectancy is being trebled and their cultural distinctives are going away. So they're calling it cultural genocide. To the scientists, these tribes are going extinct because they're no longer walking around naked, engaged in body scarification, tattooing, and body piercing. Now they wear clothes. They wear glasses. They go to the doctor instead of witch doctor. They learn to read and only get married once in a worship and church. Cultural genocide. Can't you see it? Being somewhat ignorant of the science of anthropology, I would have thought that ending intertribal warfare, cannibalism, polygamy, occultism, I would have thought it's good to end those kind of evil things. I would have also assumed in my ignorance, that giving people a gift of literacy and medicines to improve their health and their life expectancy and improving their sight with glasses and bringing the life-transforming gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ, I would have thought all that's preferable to allowing them to languish in superstition, ignorance, and animistic fear. But no, as National Geographic articles bemoan the cultural genocide of New Tribes Mission, Wycliffe, and other pioneer missions in Amazon jungle, they point out these missionaries are destroying the cultural distinctives of unique tribal cultures. Apparently, it's preferable to have illiteracy, polygamy, incessant tribal warfare, cannibalism, and human sacrifices. It's better to have slavery and high infant mortality and low life expectancies, not to mention people dying without the knowledge of Christ, in whom National Geographic doesn't believe, just so that the journalists and anthropologists can have the more interesting and financially lucrative photo ops of naked savages engaging in body scarification and eating of their neighbors. Romans 1:21 says, "For although they knew God, they neither glorified him as God nor gave thanks to him. But their thinking became futile and their foolish hearts were darkened." Talk about foolish, darkened hearts. So what is animism? Well, if you watch Disney film like Brother Bear, you see animism right there. Animism is spirit worship. It is the primary religion of over 100 million tribal people scattered throughout Africa, New Guinea, the Pacific Islands, North and South America, Australia, New Zealand, India, and Japan. That's 100 million people who, that's their primary religious adherence. But animism is far wider than that 100 million. Because elements of basic animism are also adhered to by some Muslims, Buddhists, and so-called nominal Christians. Now, you take the Maori. Many people will say that the horrible, evil, wicked English colonials came and dispossessed the Maori from their island. Well, actually, the Maori dispossessed and ate the original inhabitants of the islands. So, you know, that's just the idea that the Maoris are the original inhabitants is not true. Just like the original Indians in North America, they were not the original inhabitants, the native Indians, as they like to call them in America. They cooked and ate the original inhabitants of North and South America as well. So this is a Maori showing their delight in demon possession. Here you get an Operation World map that shows you the distribution of Muslims, depicted by the green. The darker the green, the higher the percentage of Muslims. The lighter the yellow, the brighter the yellow, the higher the percentage of Christians. And the darker the blue, then the higher the percentage of animists in Africa, or ethnic religions, tribal religions, African traditional religions, voodooism, whatever you would call it. If you look at the Operation World pie diagram, officially worldwide you've got 32% Christians in the whole world, which breaks down to Protestant, Independent, Anglican, Catholic, Orthodox, marginal, and so on, in these kind of proportions. Buddhists are 6.5%, Hindus 13.7%, which has these different castes. Islam, which of course goes into Shintoism, Sufism, and Sunni. And then you get the so-called ethnic other, 10%. 10% of world's population are traditional ethnic, meaning African traditional religions, voodooism, witchcraft, and so on. But can also include Taoism, which also has elements of that. When you look at the annual growth rates of religions, you can see that the ethnic religions are going at lower than the birth rate, whereas Christianity is growing spectacularly beyond the birth rate, and Islam is going somewhat beyond, but in fact, independent Christians, Pentecostal, evangelical, charismatic Christians are growing spectacularly faster than Islam or the birth rate. Animism is therefore a dying religion in some ways. But don't let these statistics fool you, because while it's diminishing as a primary religion, it's not disappearing, because many Muslims, Buddhists, and Christians adhere to animism as well. Go to church on Sunday, go to witch doctor on Monday. So what does animism include? Necrolatry, the worship of the souls of the dead. So tribal people tend to regard the departed ancestors as still part of the clan, and they fear the harm that the departed can do to the living. especially the fear of the harm of those who die unnaturally. So that bird over there isn't a bird, that's an ancestral spirit watching you to see that you obey the tribal customs. That person who got bitten by a snake, that wasn't a snake that bit them, it's an ancestral spirit that took the form of a snake to punish him because they weren't obeying cultural traditions. The person who was eaten by a crocodile, that wasn't really a crocodile, it's an ancestral spirit that took the form of a crocodile. That hut that was struck by lightning, that's not just natural phenomenon. Somebody made the lightning come down. Now, who was the witch who made the lightning come down? So the witch doctor will gather the people, drums will play, he'll sway, and he'll identify some poor innocent soul as responsible for this natural phenomenon like a bolt of lightning. The person responsible will normally be the local convert, person who's just become Christian, or maybe the richest person in the village, because the witch doctor gets to confiscate all their possessions if a person is executed for being a witch, and so on. There's also spirit worship. Tribal religions believe in the existence of personal spirits or demons, as well as impersonal spiritual forces in nature, which inhabit the earth, the air, the fire, the trees, the water, the mountains, animal life. Life for them is dominated by a host of taboos, things you can and cannot do, and rituals you've got to do to placate the spirits, such as in Venda. One of the things I had to do was to sacrifice the most beautiful girl in the area of Venda each year to the crocodile god. She'd get married to the crocodile gods, what they called it, but he normally just ate them. And not a high motivation for being beautiful over there. But some people wouldn't need to be carried kicking and screaming. Some people go there delighted at this wonderful privilege of being sacrificed to the crocodile god. That happened in Lake Fundudzi, Venda. I don't know if they still do it, but they were doing it as late as the 80s. Now, witch doctors are a key part of animism. These shamans or priests or witch doctors are expert mediators who know the proper incantations and sacrifices at times of sickness and disaster to placate the spirits. They throw the bones. And what's amazing is I remember going to Colton Center and finding in this tourist place at the top of the Colton Center, which used to be a very vibrant place in Johannesburg, now it's abandoned, and they were selling witchcraft bones, you know, witch doctor bones, like a tourist thing. That's not a joke. Why on earth would you want to do that? Why would sophisticated people from America and Europe and Japan want to buy witchcraft bones from Africa? And of course there's magic. You get two types of magic, imitative magic and contagious magic. Imitative magic seeks to bring harm to an enemy by attacking a representation of him, like sticking needles in a voodoo doll. I've actually had somebody asking me why it is that all of the money he spent with the witch doctor to put curse on me has failed to work, and I mean, he's been sticking the needles in my voodoo doll and things like this and nothing seems to happen. Why is that? And I could just say, greater is him who's in me than him who's in the world. Your God, Satan, needs permission from my God before he can touch me, as we learn from the book of Job. And they get a bit frustrated about this. Then there's contagious magic. The connection between a person and his hair clippings, nail paring, sweat, spit, feces, things like this. For example, in Swaziland, there is seriously given as history that the reason why the Swazis managed to defeat the Zulus, and the only people who managed to defeat Shaka as king of the Zulus, were the Swazis. Otherwise, Swaziland would be part of Zululand. And they claim, I mean, this is given a serious history, that somebody managed to get some of the semen of Shaka and brought it to witch doctors, and this is powerful mooty. So they used this in order to concoct, with this contagious magic, a curse on his armies so that they lost the battle against the Swazis. This is seriously in the history books as though that's the reason that the Swazis beat the Zulus, which I don't believe it for a second, but the fact is some of them believe it. The blood of an animal or a person may be drunk in order to gain the strength of that animal, or in the case of cannibalism, person. And so you get cannibalism. When you see a skull, human bones lying around by a fireplace, like we saw in Mozambique, you know cannibalism is operational. The Makonda people in northern Mozambique are known as cannibals. And I've met some of them, and when they smile and you see these shark-like teeth sharpened to a point, you don't accept an invitation to supper. You might be the main course. Rwanda. The massacres of hundreds of thousands of Christians in Rwanda was inspired by animism, witchcraft. The Hutu, while they were Catholics, nominally, they were witchcraft adherents, practically, And they mobilized the people to massacre the Protestant Tutsi minority. 800,000 people killed by machetes in the space of something like 100 days. In 100 days, they killed more people through machetes than have died from atomic weapons in all of history. I was at the battlefront in Sudan, and here this man was offering me a skull of an Arab to take back to the camp. And I declined. I mean, what am I going to do with an Arab skull? You know, really. And how would you explain that customs? The souvenir I was picking up. It's a gift. But this is the way some people think. And don't think technology means that people aren't involved in animism. You get a lot of people into technology who are still into animism. I've been to Parliament in Cape Town and seen these people dressed in their suits. And they put up the hand, you could see the fur around the wrist. Or you can even see when they're sitting down, the fur around the ankle, just under the suit trousers. And what's that? A goat's been sacrificed or something like this, and that's some of it, some of the goat skin that's been put there. The witch doctor's put a curse or blessing, or curse on his enemies, a blessing on him, and he's paid for this. He's paid a lot, probably. And he'll wear it. And you might see the children with the little beads around their waist, walk around with those beads. And that's normally symbolic of some prayers, incantations, spells, blessings, curses, whatever. So fetishism is a major part of animism. Superstitious belief that there's some spiritual energy or force in charms, amulets, and fetishes. Most classic of all, we've met Swapo, Frelimo, and other terrorists, people who were communists, who said that the witch doctor gave them different amulets and fetishes to carry, which would turn the bullets of the Boers into water. Well, it didn't. But, you know, it's not like they can have a money-back guarantee because, you know, if it fails, they don't tend to survive anyway. And if they do survive and get back to the witch doctor, he'll say, now, how did you apply it? Oh, you see, you meant to do it in the shade, not in the sun. Or you meant to do it in the sun, not in the shade. Or, it's got to be after you haven't eaten for 24 hours. Or they'll find some way that it's your fault why their fetish didn't work, but you've paid a fortune for it. And meanwhile, your whole unit's gotten wiped out on a foolish charge because he thought the enemy's bullets are going to turn to water. But don't just think it's for those people. How many people in the West have got their Saint Christopher to protect them when they travel? Or they might hang their rosary or crucifix over their rearview mirror, and this is meant to somehow protect their car. Or how many people do you know have got a rabbit's foot or something that they think is lucky charms? You have people doing all sorts of weird things as well. There's superstitions, even in some of the most sophisticated places. Naturism is the personification and worship of the forces of nature. So, an animist would tend to worship the sun god. The moon, like Islam, they worship the moon god. The stars, people into astrology, they think your life is determined by when you were born. And it's kind of bizarre to say, the star signs, as you are born under that star sign, that's going to affect you. So 1/12 of the world's population will all have the same things happening to them that week, according to the astrology papers. Pathetic. You get people worshipping fire, volcanoes, storms, certain type of animals. For example, the sun in ancient Egypt, Ra, was the sun god. The sacred cow of the Hindus in India, who can wander in the marketplace and eat whatever they want, and I mean, they can't stop him, he's a god after all. There's the sacred mountain of Shintoism in Japan, Mount Fuji. Naturism normally leads to idolatry and polytheism, the worship of many gods. So idolatry, polytheism, and animism go together. Naturism often relates to fertility, both in agriculture and human reproduction. So, if you want greater productivity, you sacrifice your firstborn child or things like that, like Moloch, and that was an animistic religion. And these are intended to guarantee fertility for your crops or your wives, plural. Human sacrifice is an extreme example of this, such as Idi Amin. He ate human flesh, including the heart and lungs and so on of the Archbishop of the Anglican Church. The totem poles that you can see in an Indian village would also have that. And the totem pole emphasized the unity of the clan with some sacred plant or animal. Now, there are four characteristics of animism. The whole of life is pervaded with and governed by fear. Fear is part of animism. There is just no doubt. They are afraid of the ancestral spirits. They're afraid of the dark. They're afraid of the moon. They're afraid of whatever. It's just chameleons. As a young boy, I discovered that the Matabele, amongst whom I was brought up, were terrified of chameleons because they can change color and their eyes can look in two directions at once. And so as a naughty little boy, I walk around with a chameleon saying, "Have you seen my chameleon?" To see grown men fling up their hands and scream and run away was just such a tremendous feeling of power to a wicked little boy that unfortunately I did that sort of thing. But the fear, they're afraid of all sorts of things, and especially the dog. Even frogs. Extraordinary. Discovered they're afraid of frogs. So. Unfortunately, I mentioned that to my youngest son. Next thing, he was walking around with a chameleon trying to scare people too. Number two, there's the absence of love and hope. Love and hope does not fit in animism. You'll just see that people are so terrified. There's not really love. I mean, a man will sacrifice his wife. A person will sacrifice their parents. Children will kill their parents under animism. The normal bonds of family are just broken because the fear of the ancestral spirits or the fear of the witch doctor is so much greater. And there's terrible things that happen. I mean, you just look at the lack of chivalry. This is typical in animistic culture. The women are carrying all the heavy weights and the men are walking around, well, they might be carrying their cell phone, but the women carry the heavy loads. And that is just, that's paganism. And sadly, you'll have some people who think they're Christians, but they act like this. Thirdly, there's no moral absolutes. They have a concept of sin at all, it's a violation of their culture, or violation of the customs, or violation of the spirit forces. This woman's going through a ritual purification for adultery, which in this case meant that she cooked for another man. I mean, it didn't involve adultery in a biblical sense, it just was, that's the way they call it. So they will use maybe terms we used to, but it means something different from what we mean. Fatalism is always there. You get fear, hopelessness, lack of love. You get no moral absolute, but you get fatalism. You are helpless in the face of external forces. So, for example, during a drought in Zambia, we were doing ministry in the Zambezi Valley, and the people were starving, and the kids were starving. Bloated stomachs, wasting away, stick-like arms. And we said, "You're only a few hundred meters from the greatest river imaginable, the Zambezi River. Why don't you build irrigation ditches? Government must do that. Well, your children are dying of starvation. Why don't you just carry buckets of water from the Zambezi River? It's only a few hundred meters. And you can do it at sunset. So it's got all night to seep in without any evaporation. It's a job for the Americans." The attitude was, we're completely helpless. We're at the mercy of the ancestral spirit. We're at the mercy of nature. We're at the mercy of the government. We're at the mercy of the United Nations, the Americans, whatever, the foreign aid. And this sense of I am a victim and I'm not responsible is one of the consequences of animism. They don't see that they have, they don't have the Christian work ethic, the idea of, let's see, what's the solution? We're going to build an irrigation ditch. We're going to irrigate. We're going to make a plan. No, nothing like that. It just is, somebody from the outside must come and help me. This is the deadening influence of animism, where the people do not see themselves as having any chance of improving their situation. Heathenism doesn't actually deny God. They just ignore him by worshipping natural forces. So you don't find atheists amongst the animists, but you find that they're polygamists, you find that they're polytheists, you find that they're idolatrous, and you find that they don't have a work ethic at all. And they will literally sit there by their hut and die of starvation, rather than actually do what's got to be done or to save their lives and themselves and their families. And there's mysterious demon powers and there's magical ceremonies and sacrifice, which they think is far more important than what we would see as obvious. Now, what does the Bible say? Leviticus 19:26-31, do not practice divination or sorcery. Do not cut your bodies for the dead. Do not put tattoo marks on yourself. I am the Lord your God. Do not turn to mediums or seek them out. Do not seek out spiritists, for you will be defiled by them. I'm the Lord your God. When the Lord adds his name like this at the end, I am the Lord your God, it's like he's signing, he's putting a stamp. This is important, pay attention. This is really important. And this repeats it throughout scripture. So that's Leviticus 19. in Deuteronomy 18, 9 to 13, you read, when you enter the land that the Lord your God is giving you, do not learn to imitate the detestable ways of the nations there. Let no one be found among you who sacrifices a son or daughter in the fire, who practices divination or sorcery, who interprets omens, who engages in witchcraft, or casts spells, or who is a medium or a spiritist, or who consults the dead. Anyone who does these things is detestable to the Lord. And because of these detestable practices, the Lord your God will drive out those nations before you. You must be blameless before the Lord your God. Now, this covers it all. And you will be amazed, and you can learn more from David and John about the huge role of like the Zionist Christian church. And I love the Zionist cults out there. They're massive, massive. In Zimbabwe, in northern South Africa, in Limpopo province. In fact, David lives close to Mount Zion, where millions of Zionists come every Easter. And they've got some apostle, is he? And they are very much animism and Christianity mixed together in a syncretistic blend. They've got elements of Christianity, but they've got massive elements of animism too. And this is a very popular, in fact, isn't one of the biggest denominations in the country? The Zionists, there's more Zionists in this country than there are Anglicans or Methodists. It's a massive, massive denomination. And you can see that they're religious. They're very religious. But animism is part of their religion. They've got elements of Christianity, but they've got a lot of elements of animism. And it's pretty bad. But I'll leave that for David and John to mention some things when they give reports in Zimbabwe and so on. It's extraordinary how you can see Christians adopting so much of animism. But it's also called African Independent Churches, AIC, which are broad brush. Some of them are more biblical than others. Others are more animist. But it's a generally dangerous syncretism. Syncretism is when you mix one religion with another. A lot of people in the West are Christians in their mind, but they're secular humanists in their heart. Or they're Christians in their heart and they're secular humanists in their mind. And you'll see that syncretism. But now we're talking about animism, Christianity, syncretism. One example of a country which has been dedicated to ancestral spirits is Haiti. The Wall Street Journal noted in its article, Haiti and the Voodoo Curse, the cultural roots of the country's endless misery. Despite Haiti having received billions of dollars in foreign aid over the last 50 years, it remains the least developed country in the Western Hemisphere. If I'm not mistaken, Haiti has received more aid in the Western Hemisphere than all other countries in Latin America. And yet, Haiti has defied all development predictions. Operation World reports Haiti is the poorest state in the Western Hemisphere, meaning between the Pacific and the Atlantic, South and Central and North America, this is the poorest country of them all, which receives more aid than everyone else combined in the Western Hemisphere. 75% of the population live on less than $2 a day. Unemployment's over 70%. You don't need a map to tell yourself when you've crossed from Haiti into Dominican Republic. They share the same island. Dominican Republic has trees. Haiti is deforested. Haiti has some of the worst population, drought, famine, rapid rise of drug abuse, and spread of AIDS in the Western Hemisphere. An estimated 75% of the population of Haiti are actively involved in voodooism, witchcraft, animism. Haiti is at the top of the corruption index. A full 25% of police force are on the pay of the drug lords and the gangs. When a massive earthquake hit them in 2010, it was one of the worst natural disasters to ever hit the Western Hemisphere, with over 300,000 dead. But the same year, Chile had a vastly more powerful earthquake. I think it was 10 times more powerful on the Richter scale. But there was almost nobody killed in Chile from an earthquake 10 times worse than the one that hit Haiti. So why is it that so many died in Port-au-Prince and so few died in Santiago, when Santiago had a worse earthquake? The building code in Chile is excellent, and the people have a high work ethic, and there's a very high percentage of Protestants there. And so Chile, the buildings are so well built that despite the earthquake, very few people died. In Haiti, despite them not exactly having skyscrapers, the building codes are so shocking, so pathetic, and there's no work ethic, that the people died by the hundreds of thousands in a quake much less serious than what Chile weathered without much loss of life at all. Just bear in mind, it's not a worse earthquake, but it was a worse result of a less serious earthquake. At its inception in 1803, Haiti was dedicated to Satan. In 2003, voodoo was declared the national religion of Haiti and was dedicated to Satan again on the 20th anniversary of it being dedicated to Satan. So Haiti is a great example of what Satan can do for a country. The Wall Street Journal quotes Cameroonian development expert Daniel Etongo Manuel as observing, "Voodooism is one of the principal obstacles to progress in Africa." Daniel Etongo Manuel observes, "Haiti's culture is powerfully influenced by religion, voodoo. Voodoo is one of numerous spirit-based religions common to Africa, ATR, African traditional religions, as we heard. It is without ethical content. Its followers believe that destinies are controlled by hundreds of capricious spirits, unpredictable spirits, who must be propitiated through voodoo ceremonies. Animism is a progress-resistant force." Why is it that the people of Africa were living in mud huts and thatched roofs for centuries and millenniums, while Europe was building cathedrals and stained glass windows 1,000 years ago and building most incredible libraries and universities? Voodooism, animism, it's a progress-resistant force. The Wall Street Journal observed, "The Haitian child is made to understand that everything that happens is due to the spirits. He is raised to externalize evil. Evil doesn't come from a heart. It's not me as evil. It's the spirits. It's the outside forces. It's society. He is in continuous danger. Haitians are afraid of each other." Well, of course they should be. Because your neighbor's probably putting a curse on you. You'll find a high degree of paranoia in Haiti. Animism is spirit worship. It involves necrolatry, the worship of the souls of the dead. The witch doctors or shamans are regarded as the expert mediators. They know the incantations. They know the ceremonies to protect the spirits. Animism is a religion that sees a spiritual force behind every event, and many objects in the physical world have spiritual significance. This picture is taken in Transkei, which is part of Eastern Cape. It's what they call their circumcision ritual. These teenage boys have to go through painful and highly dangerous, with many of them dying of infections from the circumcision rituals. They've got to live out in some mud hut with thatch roof with a spear for a month, and they've got to do a bunch of different things after the circumcision ritual in order to be accepted as a man in the culture. Animism is obsessed with invoking good luck and avoiding bad luck. Each community is seen as having its own set of gods and spirits, and these are territorial. Fear plays a major role. The world is full of spirits and omens and spells and forces, but through magic and divination and sacred ritual, they can seek protection and appease the gods, the spirits, and the ancestors. They observe numerous taboos and prohibitions, sacred places. For example, in Haiti, there's a sacred tree where pact with the devil was signed two hundred years ago, a pact was signed with devil and blood. Animists see a whole host of objects as sacred and with sacred power. Here's Haitian ritual where they are strangling somebody to death, much as you saw in the Itau film. Same kind of thing, even though it's another continent, same religion. They recognize sacred persons and they observe sacred actions. I mean, the witch doctor's sacred, Mandela's sacred, you've got your idols, you've got your people. One of those circumcision rituals, which young men in the Khoisa tribe must go through, hundreds of men have died from these dangerous circumcision rituals. It is not good. During the World Cup 2010, a lot of publicity was given to a Burmese rock python owned by Sangoma, witch doctor, in the Yanga, not far from here. This python, he claimed, was able to communicate to the Sangoma which team would win each match. I mean, really. And yet, gamblers paid the Sangoma for his predictions. The SPCA found the snake to be underweight, suffering from dehydration, mouth rot, pneumonia, and therefore they confiscated or rescued the python to give it medical care. The Sangoma was 25-year-old Siabonga Matwetwe, who said the SPCA does not understand the Sangomas. "Everything I said does not make sense to them," he said. Well, I fully agree. Doesn't make sense to me either. The High Court in Pietermaritzburg found 28-year-old Simangasolo Ngubane guilty of murder for having slaughtered his 17-month-old baby daughter in a ritual killing. His own daughter. Amini Zabo was stabbed by her father 6 times in what state witnesses described as an offering to the ancestors. In Gamadi testified in court, he had heard voices that instructed him to do this. Well, he probably did. But they're the voices of demons. We shouldn't listen to those. 2 teenage girls in Johannesburg were doused with petrol and satellite in a satanic ritual. The provincial police spokesman reported the girls were tied up by their friends, gee, nice friends, and burned in what appeared to be a satanic ritual. This happened. The Star quoted from Isabella Little of the Teenage Advice Forum in Life Talk that Satanism is not spoken about very often. That's true. She mentioned an incident in Cape Town where a mother reported a teenage daughter kidnapped and taken to a satanic church where another teenager was murdered, sacrificed to Satan. She managed to escape, but she was very traumatized. Police investigate the incident, but it was never mentioned in the media. Well, if some so-called Christian had done something like this, you can be sure it would be mentioned in the media. We always hear rumors about Satanism, but it's not something people are talking about. We would like them to come forward so that this can come into the open. In Uganda, the government is setting up posters on playgrounds and on roadsides warning of the danger of abduction by witch doctors for child sacrifice. Police have investigated hundreds of cases of child sacrifice in Uganda. The mutilated bodies of children have been discovered at roadsides. The Anti-Human Sacrifice Task Force. Now, you've heard of the Anti-Human Trafficking Task Force. This is the Anti-Human Sacrifice Task Force. You need a task force to deal with human sacrifice in Uganda. There's a growing belief that when you sacrifice a child, you get wealth. There are people willing to buy these children to be sacrificed for the prosperity of their business. And the UK-based charity Jubilee Campaign reports they know of over 900 cases, this is a couple of years old, that stat, of human sacrifice just in Uganda. And children are singing a song in Uganda, Heal Our Land, End Child Sacrifice. There's a book on the kidnapped girls of Uganda by Kathy Cook. A BBC undercover reporter filmed a local witch doctor who explained how the sacrifice of a child is a powerful spell. Good mooty. The witch doctor was recorded saying there's 2 ways we can do this. We can bury the child alive on your construction site, or we can cut him up in different places, put the blood in a bottle of spiritual medicine. This is recorded on BBC, and there's the evidence. You can buy in South Africa. This is an advert for Dr. Uber's clinic. You provide him with eyes, he'll provide you 5,000 rand cash. Breast, 1,800. Tongue, 2,500. Rhino parts available at the clinic. Testicles, up to 1,600. Kidney, 3,800. Body parts. Where are they getting these body parts from? Well, where do you think they're getting them from? Hitchhikers. Runaways, in particular. Kids who run away from home often are never heard of again. Somebody's going around, they pick them up at the side of the road, they take them off, and next thing you know, they sacrifice Satan and their body parts are being sold to the local shop. And this man's got his cell number. You think he's being prosecuted by the police? I doubt it. The National Executive Committee of Traditional Healers Association, Sindapele Sobhakota Kamashina, claimed that the roads of South Africa are haunted because whites have not fetched the spirits of the dead from roadside accident sites. He explained that the growing Christian tradition of putting up roadside memorial crosses and placing flowers at the scene of an accident of the death stops the soul of the deceased from departing. He said roadside memorials cause accidents because the white people don't appease their loved ones' spirits. He explained that in African traditions, the spirit of the dead is brought home from the scene of the accident. They use a branch from a young tree to seep up the spirit and take it to the body, which must be buried in the ancestral area. And so although there are hundreds of thousands of causes working in Cape Town, living in Khayelitsha, you try and find a cemetery there. I mean, there might be, but I haven't seen one. I've been working in Khayelitsha for a long time. You don't see cemeteries there easily. Because the vast majority of causes that die in Cape Town are shipped back to Transkei at great expense. And all the people go for the funeral because that's the ancestral home. That's where they must be buried. These and many other examples remind us that animism is real. And the consequence of dedicating a nation to ancestral spirits is very dangerous. And that's what old Zuma did a while ago. He dedicated this country to ancestral spirits. The scriptures are clear. You shall not practice divination or soothsaying. You are not to give regard to mediums or familiar spirits. Do not seek after them. You'll be defiled by them. You shall not follow the example of the heathens. You shall not learn to follow the abomination of those nations. You are not to be involved in any of these things. Soothsaying, witchcraft, spiritism, spells, conjuring up the dead. All who do these things are an abomination to the Lord. It's because of these abominations that the Lord your God drives him out before you. And so, why did the Maori lose control over New Zealand? They were driven out. They were subjugated because they were engaged in witchcraft. Same with the Aborigines in Australia, same with the Xhosa in South Africa, same with the Indians in North America. And as the Europeans, Australians, New Zealanders, and so on, turn to this witchcraft, they will also lose their countries. They'll be driven out. It's because of these abominations that the Lord your God drives them out before you. You shall be blameless before the Lord your God. For these nations which you will dispossess, they listen to soothsayers and diviners. But as for you, the Lord your God has not appointed such for you. So Deuteronomy 18 makes it clear. God is the God of the nations. He will give them to whoever he wants. And he has given us this good land because our ancestors were worshipping the Lord and turned from the sins. And if we turn from God and we turn to sins, we will lose it. And others will get it. And if they are disobedient to God, God will drive them out and replace them as well. This is history. This is scriptural teaching. The scripture clear that we are not to communicate with the spirits of departed ancestors. It's appointed unto man once and then after the judgment. You are not communicating with your ancestral spirit. There's a great gulf set between the living and the dead. And communication between them is impossible. We learn from Jesus, who quotes Abraham, saying this in Luke 16. I remembered my father speaking about when his mother died, he went to a clairvoyant and communicated with the spirit of his mother through the clairvoyant. When I was converted and I was at my first mission hospital Christian fellowship, they were speaking about these things, and I saw the need for me to pray over this, to rebuke this, to reject this, because I realized that could bring a curse upon the family that you would have done this. And I remembered a whole lot of things we had in the home, like face masks from witch doctors, and that you're born aside the road in Rhodesia, and we got rid of that. The thing is, there's a lot of things we do thoughtlessly, which we should reject. I remember as a young boy going to visit a neighboring farm, and they were doing glossy-glossy, and I don't know if they were doing it genuinely or what, but we're part of it. That's just something you want to reject, because why was I involved in it? What did we do? This is opening the door to bondage, actually. Many people think they're communicating with ancestral spirits. They're actually communicating with deceptive spirits, demons, unclean spirits, evil spirits, fallen angels who've rebelled and are bound for judgment. Their power is limited. They serve the devil, the prince of darkness, the prince of this world. Occult practices honor Satan, not God. Occultism makes the enemies of God the guiding source, the source of knowledge and the guiding force. So why are some people's lives wrecked? I mean, you look at some people. They do drugs. They get drunk. They get tattoos. They go to the clairvoyant. They read their astrology things. They listening to angry hip-hop, death metal, rap, whatever. And then they wonder, why is my life in such a mess? I mean, really and truly, we're doing everything. It's like, you might as well go out there and drink rat poison. It would do you more good. And the amount of people who are putting poison in their heart, mind, ears, eyes, heart, and then they wonder, why is my life a mess? Well, Satan's, these are all outreaches for hell. Those who are giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons are departing from the faith. We are commanded to not learn the ways of the heathen. Jeremiah 10:2. So this is animism. How are we to respond? The Bible teaches us not to fear Satan, not to fear his demons, but to stand against him in the strength of the Lord. For God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of self-discipline or sound mind. Submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. So, this is one of the chapters in the Great Commission manual. I should point out on the table we put Reclaiming Surrendered Ground, which is the full notes of the presentation I gave the other day on that part of spiritual warfare, and we've got more spiritual warfare coming up on Wednesday too, in how to counter all that Wednesday evening. Any other comments or questions on animism? Witchcraft? I should say an example of how this affects us in missions. A friend of mine who studied at college, his dad had been a missionary in the Congo, and he was studying to go to the Congo, and he went to the Congo. And they weren't getting anywhere. He and his wife and young baby arrived, and the people suddenly weren't talking to them, they weren't coming to service, and all this hard work. And the people as unresponsive, and yet his parents had such great response. And it turned out in the end somebody shared them the reason. Their baby food. Because you've got no privacy in these areas. People come, they look in your cupboards, they check what's there and under the bed. And of course they saw that, you know, you've got tins of meat. There's a picture of a cow on the outside, there's meat on the inside, and he eats it. You've got tins of mealies on the outside, and inside's the corn, and you eat that. And what are you feeding your child? You've got this purity glass jar, the lid. There's a picture of a baby's head on the outside. And you're feeding your child baby brains. I mean, what else can be in there? Why would you have a picture of baby's head on the outside if that's not the contents of the jar? Misunderstanding, but serious consequences. We know what a platonic relationship is. Most people in these animist areas don't. So, for example, we might go and say there's, at the mission station, there's one married man and his wife, they live in a big house, and then there's some single missionaries and they live in a small house. Now, 85% of missionaries in the world today are women, so it's quite common that you'd have a mission station where there's one big house for the man and his wife, and then there's a whole lot of little rondavels and there's single women. Now, we know what's happening, but what does the animist see? The polygamist see? Man with wife one in a big house, and wife two, wife three, and wife four in the small houses. Now, we may not even preach against polygamy, but they know that we're against polygamy. So they're thinking, what hypocrites? They talk against polygamy, but this man's got four wives, and he says we're wrong to have four wives. Another thing, we know what's happening when we have a bride place. But my friend, Fano Sibisi from KwaZulu, he says, you know what our people think happens when you have a bride place in your home? Yeah, you're worshipping your ancestors. I mean, like every home, especially the Afrikaners, got an altar in the back garden. They've got the stone altar. And regularly, they gather the members of their clan, their family around there, and they have a fire, and they have the sacrifice. And then they have the meal after the sacrifice. So they worship the ancestral spirits. Why are they criticizing us for worshiping the ancestors? I mean, you do it. Now, I'm a moth, member of the Tin Hat, Memorial Order of the Tin Hat. And 11th of November, what do? We go to the memorial of where soldiers are remembered. There's normally a statue of a soldier in commemoration of those who died in the First and Second World Wars and so on. And we stand there, we lay flowers at the base, we pray, probably sing. We know what we do. We're remembering the sacrifice and we're honoring them. What is an animist see? You're worshipping your ancestors. So here's a classic. I've taken some of our people past Church of Scotland Hospital in KwaZulu-Natal. Church of Scotland Hospital, Kosh, the only hospital for miles around, and they would have an average of 14 gunshot and stab wounds a day, trauma patients to deal with. And that's not doing riots, that's just normal. Church of Scotland Hospital was planted 100 and something years ago, and the man who planted the hospital there, a Scotsman, he went back and he died in Scotland at old age, and his will said he wanted his body to be burned and the ashes to be brought back to Tugela Ferry and scattered on the Tugela River by Tugela Ferry near the hospital church that he started. So they arrived, all the church leaders from Tugela Valley went down to Durban Airport, collected the urn ceremony and drove back in the convoy, went to the church, had a worship service, thanked the Lord for this wonderful missionary who did so much for them. They went in procession, sing to the river, and at the Tugela River they prayed and they scattered the ashes on the river. Now we know what he meant, but what did the local animist people see? You Christians speak against witchcraft, but you've just cursed our river source. The water that we use for washing, cleaning, cooking, drinking. You put the muti, the most powerful medicine possible, the ashes of this great man, on this river. you put a curse over our community. You Christians have just done witchcraft to us. It didn't matter how much the Christians tried to explain. Now, there's probably no sin involved. There was no ill intent, no malice. But the damage done was real. They put the course of missions in Tugela Valley back decades on top. It was a colossal mistake. They could hardly have done something more damaging. Because they looked like hypocrites. You're doing what you've condemned. You speak as witchcraft, but you've done it. So can you see, we need to understand the animist mindset so that we don't fall into the trap of discrediting our ministry.